Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life after booze.
Hi, I'm Kaylee, and I have been alcohol-free for 479 days.
Dude.
500 days of sober.
You know, I've never seen the 500 Days of Summer movie. Sober, it's better.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I've been alcohol-free for 1 year and 30 days, which, like, my perfectionism and OCD loves that number.
Yeah, 1 year and 1 month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How are you feeling today, Kay?
Oh my God. So much. I'm feeling just so much. So I have just been up my own ass all week, Katie. Like, I have been so hard on myself. I started this new job and everything's fine, but I just keep thinking that no one likes me, and it's just so much. And then I get frustrated at myself for being so hard on myself because I can't make it stop. And so I'm just this wound up ball of stress for no reason. And I'm just really trying to do everything I can. I took my dog for a walk in the sun today. I went to a kava house and got some kava and chilled and played on my computer. And I'm feeling better, but I just cannot let myself off the hook for anything. And I hate it. So we're working on it.
I'm sorry. Sorry, dude. That's rough. I need to address a couple of things. I love that you went on a walk, and I love that you went to a kava house and, like, chilled and made time for yourself. I don't do that. I mean, yeah, I, like, go to the gym and I, you know, do all my things, but I don't ever, like, take intentional time to just spend out of my environment on my computer by myself. So maybe I'll start trying to add some of that in.
It was really nice, honestly. I fucking love eavesdropping. And so.
Oh, yeah. Tell me.
Yeah. It was the first time I've been to a coffee house. And I used to do that all the time, you know, when I was in college, especially. So it was cool to get to listen in on a bunch of other people's conversations. And it seemed like there's definitely some sober people there. I heard one person mention that they don't drink. So that might be my spot for a little bit.
I love that.
Yeah.
Cool. What'd you get to drink?
Kava. It literally looked like fucking rainwater in a puddle, and it tasted that way. And then they give you a pineapple that you're supposed to, like, eat at the end to kind of, like, reset everything.
Cool.
I would have loved if the whole thing was mixed with pineapple juice, and it's served in like a coconut thing, and the lady's very much like, this is what I'm serving today. This is what I'm offering. It really did actually relax me. Like, I felt a lot better after drinking it, but yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
There was a kava house here in Eugene, and they were vegan, which they had the best plant-based, like, chicken salad wrap, and I used to get it all the time. It was so fucking good, but I think that they stopped serving food, but they are still open, so maybe we can go next time you come down.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome. How has your week been? In our last episode, you were taking care of a coworker who was eye bleeding.
OMG. Yeah, so I'm feeling good. Said coworker has their final appointment tomorrow and will probably be back to work, like, shortly after.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he'll be fine, thankfully. That was scary. I can't imagine. Like, your eyes are... I was just going to say, like, my eyes are sacred. Like, they're... you know? Like, I can't live without them. And so it's very scary. And, yeah. Anyways, I digress. I went to Bend this weekend, and so I'm still kind of recovering for one, like, super late night and just processing all of the events of the weekend. I had a really great time for the most part. So, yeah, I got my eyebrows done today, and I went shopping at Lululemon, and I went to Orange Theory after work, and I ignored my house duties and my family, and I'm recording, and I just needed a day like that.
I also got my eyebrows done today.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. And I've been doing the exact same. I've been doing jack shit around the house, and I've just been off in my own world. So,
same.
I feel you. What are we talking about this week, Katie?
Well, one of our favorite accounts on Instagram shared an article, like sent it to me and was like, listen, bitch, you guys need to cover this. At the Magic is in the Middle.
Love.
Yeah, we've talked about them before. And she shared this article that just sent me into a whole fucking spiral about big alcohol.
And I'm reading Holly Whitaker's Quit Like a Woman, which mentions and speaks to big alcohol a lot. And yeah, it's easy to get super, super angry. So we're going to talk about it. It's a fucking billion-dollar industry that keeps us playing small and keeps us sick. And so, you know, what does that actually look like? Peeling the curtain back and looking into how that affects us and what we can do about it. So
yeah. And then what we can't unsee, right? Like,
right.
This industry, it asks you to take responsibility for the poison that they glamorize and exchange for the money you give them in an unregulated amount.
It's just impossible to meet the standard of like, drink responsibly. We're going to give you this literal like ethanol carcinogenic substance. And if you don't drink, then you're not cool. But if you drink too much, then you're a fucking addict. So
yeah, exactly. It's like, what do I always say? It's the only drug that people tell you you need to do as much as possible until you have a problem, and then you need to not do it at all.
It really is crazy. Fucking crazy.
Yeah,
like, it's just so crazy.
Yeah, so she sent me that article, and Kaylee and I got to talking, and we were just thinking, like, how did big alcohol play a role in our lives before we started drinking? And I had to think about it. Alcohol, I didn't grow up in a household with alcohol. My mom didn't drink, and I think maybe my stepdad like would drink Bud Light here and there, but it was never messaging that came through in our house. It was actually, if anything, like the forbidden fruit. And so when that happens and you don't talk about it, the outcome is always learning it somewhere else.
Yeah, I have the exact opposite situation though, and I still ended up like right here. So,
well, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to get into it about your situation, but I just mean like we talk about big alcohol in our house to our daughter.
Yeah.
Like we inform and educate. And that's what I mean by, you know, my mom obviously knew that alcohol was bad, but we didn't talk about it. And I think that that is something that I would tweak just so I wasn't learning about it from other people and other people's family dynamics, you know?
Right.
We had this like, this friend growing up, him and his girlfriend loved Crown Royal. And actually, I'm seeing like a lot of themes with whiskey and Crown Royal in my memories around alcohol from when I was a kid. This guy, have I told you guys about the Crown Royal and Mountain Dew?
I don't remember. I don't think so. Yeah. But Crown Royal bags definitely have a memory, like childhood of them being around the fucking little purple satchel.
I think that's like a quintessential millennial childhood favorite. Like, put your fucking coins and shit in your parents' Crown Royal bag. But I just remember they would drink Crown Royal and Mountain Dew with no ice, like a mixed drink.
No.
Yeah. And he was a family friend and he had like a younger girlfriend.
That's like the OG Four Loko, like a shit ton of caffeine and alcohol.
I didn't even
That's
think
like
about that.
Bathtub Four Loko. Yeah.
I did not even think about that. I don't think I ever saw him drunk, but it was always there in their house. And then he had a younger girlfriend. And I remember she would take us to the beach because we lived in like a beach town in Michigan on Lake Michigan. And she would have like a kids to go cup with a lid and a straw and would call it her grown-up juice. So I vaguely remember that. And I talked about in the first episode, I had a friend growing up whose, you know, grandparents drank. And so it was around there a lot. But, you know, I think the general, like, overall messaging that really affected me was using alcohol as a means to like feel sexy as a kid. So like the adultification by big alcohol of women.
Dude, yes, 100%. And then it was proliferated by even the music of the times, you know, and there was this,
oh God, I didn't even.
Yes. Buy you a drink.
Dude, we need a fucking auto-tune option here.
Seriously, like the lyrics, we had drinks, we drunk them, got drunk, like the fuck.
Or like, you know, like, I mean, honestly, every song in that time had some like way to allude to love and alcohol.
Yeah.
And I really think that that was the time in, and I would have to look this up. So maybe this is something for another episode too. I love to cover pop culture and like big alcohol branding. And during, you know, the late 90s and 2000s were really the time where it became big for pop artists to represent alcohol companies.
Yeah, and there's drag queens now that have certain affiliations or sponsorships with alcohol as well. So,
which is like so fucked up, Kaylee, because LGBTQ plus like communities are much more heavily affected by alcohol and drug abuse statistically.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
It's so problematic. I can't even, we don't even have that in our outline today, Dry Hard Pod fam. And my blood is like, I need to take a breath about that.
Well, yeah, like Tito's Vodka sponsors a lot of LGBTQ events and just events in general. I feel like fucking everything that I've gone to in Portland has been sponsored by Tito's Vodka. And I mean, in order to have cool events, you need sponsors. But it gets a little tricky when the messages don't match. They don't line up, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then just, you know, I started working in a restaurant when I was 15. And
I didn't realize it was that young.
Yeah, I started working at the Big T, which is the only restaurant in my little town of Lawton that I grew up in. I worked there on Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights as an expediter in the kitchen. So I worked with like all 30 plus men in the kitchen. And then on Saturday mornings, Sunday mornings, and then for my 0 hour on Monday mornings, I worked at the breakfast place from 5 a.m. until 8:30, which was the only breakfast restaurant in town, and they were owned by the same family. So, I mean, that whole, you know, if you want to take a break, you need to smoke a cigarette, we're going to stay after hours and drink and do coke. Like, that was all introduced to my life at 15. And even before then, I worked at Abby's Pizza in Junction City for 6 months when I was a sophomore. So I was only 14. Well, I guess on my freshman year, I was 14. I worked there like 15 hours a week, and it was the same. That's when I started smoking cigarettes more regularly. So
that's really interesting, because when you talk about drinking after work and, you know, doing white drugs, I always associate it with your last food industry employer.
And it existed there as well, right? Like, it was actually, yeah, it was worse there because I was old enough to not be deathly fucking terrified of participating in it. But I also was old enough to care a little bit less about what people thought of me. And so when I was that young, just, I mean, I'm also not going to get into that, but, you know, just the tobacco, the alcohol, and the sexual harassment, they all just go hand in hand with each other. And as minors working and being required to work, if I wasn't playing a sport, I had to work. That was the rule in my house growing up. And so,
yeah,
that exposure started really young for me.
Can't imagine like a small 14-year-old, 15-year-old girl in a kitchen full of a bunch of like drunk, sweaty men.
Yeah, it was gross.
That sounds fucking horrible.
Well, and when I would do something wrong, they would fucking scream at me, dude.
Ugh.
Like if I like accidentally took a plate from a set of dinners that weren't ready because I didn't read the ticket correctly, I would get called a bitch.
God damn it.
And a dumbass, like, you know, and it's actually, I'm repeating all of this, but I haven't visited any of that at all. Like, I haven't even acknowledged that that happened to me until like just now. So I'm sure plenty of you out there listening to this, especially people that are a little bit older than me, you probably had some of these same experiences. I think things change for people 25 and lower, and maybe not, maybe I'm wrong, but I definitely think it was like an older millennial environment that a lot of us were exposed to.
Yeah, and also just younger years again, you know, Katie, you mentioned that your house didn't have alcohol in it, and mine was literally the exact opposite. My dad worked for Western Beverage.
Oh my God.
There were, in our garage, there were light up signs of, you know, Bacardi. Budweiser was huge. There were posters of girls, like 80s women riding jet skis, wearing Budweiser one pieces. It was all over the house. And so alcohol was definitely something that my parents and, you know, or at least, you know, my dad and my dad's friends drank so frequently that I didn't really associate it with necessarily getting drunk until later. I just thought it was like an adult flavored soda, and that, you know, when my dad like just got too tired, he would sleep on the floor.
You know? Yeah.
It was just so normalized. Like, I would get my dad beer from the fridge. And I remember when I was little, I like put a straw in it. He was like, no, that's not how you serve a beer, which is just a whole other thing about fucking. It's another thing to gender, right? It's another thing to make you feel shitty about yourself. Like, oh, that's a girly drink, or like real men drink Michelob Ultra fucking camo cans. Like, stupid shit.
Yeah, dude. I hear you there. Especially with like the wine industry, man.
Yeah, wine tasting and going to wineries, and it seems like this fancy thing. And in reality, it's like literally just drinking 6 glasses of wine at 3 different places, right?
And not only that, but dude, wine is just as like alcohol percentage wise is like a bum drink.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Katie. Like 12%, like 13%.
And you're drinking an entire bottle. Like, what the fuck?
And it's so funny because it is. It's like, it's fucking gendered and it's class systemed. Like, if you are drinking oldie, then, you know, you're trash. But if you're getting drunk on scotch, if you're getting drunk on like the nicest bourbon, you're still fucking destroying your insides. So what does it?
Yeah.
Like, but it's all branding, right? It's all, you know, buy this and you will be perceived as X, right? So. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah. I have this funny while I was drinking. I was planning my wedding. I always call it my wedding. And Steve's like, hi, our wedding. And I'm like, my wedding. When I was planning our wedding, it was like the biggest part of it was like, what liquor are we going to serve?
Oh.
And we wound up getting 2 full kegs, one of like a Blue Moon and then one juicy IPA from a local brewery. And I really think that this ties in here that like growing up in Eugene and Portland, or like just in the, they actually call it Beervana, the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
That woke beer culture is so heavy. And I feel like a lot of people start drinking really young when it has to do with like beer. It's almost like you were talking about like the sophistication of wine, you know, it's kind of a similar industry. So we're planning our wedding and the beer was a thing. And then I wanted wine. And so I ordered 2 cases of Chardonnay and 1 case of red. Well, my friend worked for Columbia at the time.
Okay. Which is a distribution company for alcohol.
Yeah. And she actually had a friend that was higher up. And so she was like, hey, let's look at this catalog. And she was helping me plan my wedding. She's a fucking badass bitch. But she was like, let's order. So I ordered this like super great Chardonnay. I was a Chardonnay drinker. And it was really cheap and it seemed great, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, we got it. And I was expecting 36 bottles. So I guess it was 3 cases of Chardonnay. I was expecting 36 bottles of Chardonnay. And what I got was 36 individual plastic wine balls stacked on top of each other.
What?
In cases with foil peel off tops.
Whoa, weird. That doesn't seem sustainable either. Like, that's so much fucking plastic.
So I ordered all of this, okay? And I like, I'm not going to lie to everyone here. I paid like $25,000 for my fucking wedding day. I am not serving fucking wine in plastic individual fucking bubble bottles to my guests. So like any other normal person, I fucking drank them all in the summer before my wedding.
Oh.
I attribute that mix up to a lot of my drinking problem in 2019 before Steve and I got married. That's when my drinking really started ramping up again. I would take those little fucking bubbles to kickball. I was on a kickball team. I would take them to volleyball. I played volleyball. I would take them to float the river. Like, they were just these perfect little tiny portable fucking plastic balls with wine in it. I could drink 3 of them and be fucking good to go. You know what I mean? Like, totally normal. It's wine.
Yeah, this is reminding me that the time that I had to be driven to the hospital for alcohol poisoning was I drank a Bandit, which is great branding, convenient packaging, Chardonnay that would be like $7.99 at Plaid Pantry, but it was the equivalent of like 2.5 bottles of wine in this one fucking container. Yeah. And I was in a kiddie pool in my backyard and I was just chilling and I got way too drunk.
Yeah. And
so
totally. I finished all three cases before we got married and we actually ordered more wine from another wine sale. So I put away, what's 36 times 4?
I suck at math. Here, I got you. 36 times 4, 144.
I drank 144 glasses of wine the summer of my wedding. And that's not including all the beer and all the other drinks, right? So anyways, long story short, alcohol has just existed without question in my life for a very fucking long time.
Speaking of the normalization of alcohol, but also just the fucking peer pressure, right? Like, they talk about it, they show it on fucking Degrassi, and it's a real thing where in all the movies that I watched, in, you know, Freaks and Geeks, That 70s Show, like all that shit, it was, if you do not want to drink and party, then you're the like nerdy girl on the math team who thinks your friend has changed and stops getting invited to stuff. Like in middle school, if you weren't fucking chugging some weird liquor or beer that you stole from your parents in the bathroom before school, like, you were a narc and a virgin and no one wanted to hang out with you. Like,
totally.
I was always trying to prove that I was fucking hard and that I was gonna drink anything, was gonna take any pill anyone handed to me, like snort whatever was offered to me, like no fucking problem, because I thought that that made me cool. Like, what is with that? That's so fucking weird. But it, I mean, even the alcohol ads always show these hot people hanging out at parties drinking.
Totally.
So
yeah, I, you know, I remember being way too young. Like, when I say way too young, I mean like an eighth grader. And I stayed at a friend's house. We would stay in this tent out in her yard so that when we snuck out, her grandparents couldn't hear. And I remember going to these guys' house who were in high school, like years older than me.
This is a theme of like older dudes.
Yeah.
I keep hearing about older men hanging out with younger women and it's so weird.
Well, and to not, let's say older dudes and young girls, like not younger women. Like I, you know, I was 13.
Yeah.
And I just remember wanting so badly to be fucking cool. My self-esteem was this fucking size of a pinprick, you know?
Yeah, a speck.
Yeah, so I had none. You know, we would go with them, and I remember smoking pot and then drinking, I don't even know what kind of beer, but I just remember being drunk in the sand and wondering why the sand felt like it couldn't come off of my skin. Like, what the fuck? This sand will not fucking stop. It's relentless. And we went back to one of their houses and like we're in the basement hanging out, and I just remember like them drinking beers and watching porn and me being like a 13-year-old feeling like I had to be cool and like laugh at all of this. And finally they take us home. I was missing a shoe by the time we got back. This isn't at night, you know, from like 11 p.m. until 4 o'clock in the morning. And you know, it just, that just continued for a very long time, where I noticed that stuff was happening. And I'm really lucky that nothing more serious happened to me, you know?
Exactly. And that's the thing, is like when you're that age, you literally fucking feel invincible and like nothing bad's gonna happen. And so it would be so hard for me to go back and tell my former self like not to do that shit, because I would just shrug it off and be like, whatever, fuck you.
Yeah.
But it's so scary. It's so scary, the situations that, you know, we all put ourselves in when we were young to try and fill some hole or make us feel like we were a part of something or fucking cool. And then it's just so weird to look back and be like, so those dudes were in high school and they thought it would be cool to sit around and drink beer and watch porn with a bunch of 13-year-old girls. Like, it's just fucking,
like, with eighth graders.
Yeah, with eighth graders.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Weird.
Weird. Weird all around.
Super weird.
But, you know, they had probably been drinking for like years at that point. So
yeah, I'm sure of it. So I feel like, you know, when you're actively drinking, it's really hard to see all of this hidden messaging.
Yes.
From big alcohol.
Yes.
When did you notice that you were like, oh, what's happening to me? My relationship with alcohol is being influenced by a bigger force, right? By a multi-billion-dollar industry. Did you have like a moment for that, or what did that look like for you?
Yes, I feel like as soon as I tried to stop drinking for the first time, when I did my first like 30-day stint, I just realized how much it was fucking everywhere. It was before COVID and quarantine, and just the amount of alcohol that was in my place of work and the amount of happy hours and any social event was drinking related. And you just don't really realize it, that, you know, the movie theater fucking offers beer. So every time we go see a movie, everyone's drinking. Every time we go bowling, everyone's drinking. I go to the place to get my fucking eyebrows waxed and they ask if I want a glass of champagne. Like, it is every single place that I go, 24 hours a day, there is alcohol there or nearby. You know, you're seeing it on TV, you're seeing it in the shows that you're watching, and then you're just walking around and it's all fucking over the place.
Yeah.
So I think that's when I really started to feel kind of othered and realized like this stuff is all surrounding me and I feel like a crazy person because I'm the odd man out. I'm the one standing outside of it. But the fact that this is literally being beaten over our heads, drink alcohol, it's totally normal. It's totally normal. It's just totally normal to drink alcohol all the time, everywhere. Oh, it's fucking weird. And it's still really weird to me. But I'm still learning about a lot of the shit, you know? Like, it is new to me that alcohol is carcinogenic. I didn't fucking know that.
That's because that information has been buried and or not brought to light until recent like months and years.
The fact that people can get away with shit, like, I don't know, it's just slimy.
It's the fucking patriarchy, right? Like, it's a bunch of white dudes making billions of dollars sitting in a tower somewhere fucking watching people's lives crumble.
Yes. And the fact that folks get away with it is so disheartening to me. My little heart is broken that this is a thing. And then there's people that are struggling so hard and feel so isolated and so alone and think that they're an addict and there's something fucking wrong with them when everyone else is drinking this highly addictive fucking ethanol and pointing the finger at them saying, well, you didn't drink responsibly. Like, that's not fair.
No, dude, that's like, I want to put your statement on a loop for people who are like new to quitting alcohol.
Yeah.
Because people need to know. I mean, of course I'm taking responsibility for my actions, right? You can do that and say something else needs to happen. Something needs to change.
It's just so weird. Like, if you are trying to quit smoking, right? Which I actively am trying to quit nicotine, but I fucking know that it's bad for me. Like, I am aware.
A lot of people have no idea that alcohol is bad for them because it's not discussed.
No idea. And if you were trying to quit smoking, at every single restaurant, you could smoke cigarettes indoors. In Starbucks, you could smoke cigarettes indoors. Every movie character, everything, you know, is smoking all the time. It would be really hard for you. So we live in a society where it's a whole fucking thing. So,
yeah, I hear you. I know that right before this episode, just so everyone knows, Kaylee was just like doing a little bit of research, just, you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's, and she went on a fucking rant.
I was like, wait, what?
About cancer warnings on alcohol and how they don't exist. And Kay, like, I need more context for that.
Yeah. Okay. So let me roll up my sleeves and get down to business here, because this is bizarre to me. So it was a study that they were doing in Canada, because public health is something that affects budgets and whatnot. And so there's usually like the quit tobacco campaigns, like how do we keep our general public healthy? So two Canadian researchers were deciding that they would do a test where they would put cancer warnings on alcohol, and Big Alcohol got fucking pissed, and they basically just hide it and make it seem like it's not, I don't know. I don't know how they can, I still don't understand how they can get away with not putting it on there, but it's very much a fact that alcohol, drinking alcohol, causes several different kinds of cancer. It's a carcinogen, it's carcinogenic, and everyday drinkers don't know that.
Yeah.
And I have a fucking knockoff Peloton and that has a cancer warning on it, on the label, on the bike. And I have no, I'm still like concerned. I don't know how it causes cancer. But if that has to have that label, how is big alcohol just paying a bunch of fucking money to make this shit go away? You know what I mean?
100%. And if you guys listening in, if you just Google cancer and alcohol, the first thing that pops up. And listen, most of you have heard of the CDC, right? Especially after the last couple of years we've had.
Yes.
Most of you probably trust the CDC. Most of you have probably referenced it a lot. So reference it for this, quote unquote, all alcoholic drinks, including red and white wine, beer and liquor, are linked with cancer. The more you drink, the higher your cancer risk. That is the first fucking thing that comes up in Google when you Google cancer and alcohol. Why is there not a label on alcoholic beverages?
So apparently since November 1989, federal law has required every alcoholic beverage sold in the United States to bear a health message that warns pregnant women against drinking, but it has not been updated since then with any scientific findings or anything like that.
And what year was that?
That was 1989.
Holy shit.
So like the year before I was born, they haven't updated any sort of... It's just may cause health problems.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, if you go to the National Cancer Institute, the following cancers are associated with drinking alcohol: mouth cancer, voice box, throat, breast, esophagus, liver, colon, and rectum cancer.
Dude, that's fucked up.
Yeah. And what's really crazy and scary is that so many people in the United States, so many people in the world drink alcohol that we've never really had access to this information because there's no way to have... These are the, you know, the people who don't consume alcohol, and these are the people who do.
Right. Well,
you know, but now that they are taking those two controlled testing, you know, subjects and finding higher rates of cancer in the drinkers, that makes sense to me. Almost everyone I know who has died of cancer were drinkers, but almost everyone I know drinks. So it's fucking hard, you know?
Yeah, seriously. And it's definitely going back to that cool girl, you know, you don't want to be the odd person out. Giving those facts doesn't necessarily make anyone super happy, right?
No, like, one wants
you
to
don't
want to
know that the thing that you're drinking every single day is fucking killing you. And
well, and to be fair, right, if that was enough, Kaylee, we would all be the pillars of health. And we're not. We all participate in things that are not good for us, right? But like,
oh, 100%. Yes.
And you know, there is a certain level of being able to make your own decisions based on the information you have. And so, but come on.
But if you don't have any information, if the information is being hid from you, you're not able to make a conscious decision.
Right.
Right.
And, so. And the information is being hid from you by an industry
that doesn't give a shit about you and just wants your fucking money.
It makes so much money. I have a number for you. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, shoot it at me.
They are able to hide this information, big alcohol, as an industry, because in 2015, the alcohol market was valued at $1,344 billion.
That's so much money.
It's so much money. I don't even know how to put enough zeros and put all the things in the right places in that number. So I wrote it as a word. But I can't even. So with all of that being said, I feel like when I started not drinking or toying with the idea of like sober curiosity, you know what stood out most to me? Mommy wine culture.
Dude, the live, laugh, wine shit. I cannot with it.
Yeah. So, you know, when I started toying with the idea of sobriety, I realized that I had been using the mommy wine culture narrative for myself. And I die over that because I'm an every other week step parent to a mostly like self-sufficient child. Like I have no excuse, right? Like I am using my child as a scapegoat, like my responsibility for them as a means to drink more alcohol when I actually don't take care of a child by myself. I have three other totally capable and amazing human beings who are helping me with that.
Well, and I think that the narrative that I can't stand my fucking kids. So I have to drink every single night because my life as a parent is miserable.
Right. Or
is sad. Well, it's like, oh, fuck, dude. Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, and then not only that, like, let's take another step further, right? When women are not given and mothers are not given autonomy in their households and in their relationships, they don't have another choice besides to disassociate. I mean, there's not a lot of coping mechanisms that they have access to that are healthier than that, especially when they're in relationships without proper support,
mm-hmm.
when they don't have access to therapy.
Yeah.
When they are financially overwhelmed. When they are, you know, working full time and have children. I mean, there are so many reasons why moms are in this position, and it's not their fault.
Don't even get me started on women who work, but also take on 75% of the, you know, household work and a lot of the emotional labor.
The invisible fucking workload.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a lot. And when you are, you know, pushed to the brink, what do they say? Like in a recession, I tried quoting this in another episode and I couldn't figure out what the second thing was, but alcohol is the first choice, sometimes like least expensive choice, the easiest choice because it's fucking everywhere. It's so easily accessible. You can walk down the street and get it right now, mm-hmm. right? For people to be able to cope with things when, like, if I don't have health insurance, I'm not fucking going to therapy. I'm not paying $200 an hour to try and figure out why I feel so shitty every night when I get off work. Like,
yeah, I 100% agree with that. And then to add, like, this is a generational problem, right? Like, this has mm-hmm. existed since, you know, to the beginning of time. But really, like, let's say capitalism, stay-at-home mom, glorified drinking father. What do you want to say? 40s?
Yeah.
1930s, 1940s? You know, and then you have like the Mad Men era and like the marketing and advertising era. And like then you have, you know, generations that were raised by fathers coming back from war that didn't have support and became alcoholics and the abuse in those cycles. I mean, this is hundreds of years. Maybe I'm on a tangent.
I think you're totally right, Katie, because I was doing some more research and was just finding out that in fucking George Washington times, they were getting so drunk all the time that like that's why prohibition was instated, right? Because everyone was so off their fucking shit.
Off the wagon? On the wagon?
Off the wagon? On the wagon? They were getting fucking turnt. George Washington and his little Whig homies were getting turned and they weren't getting any shit done, and like society was fucking collapsing. So they had to be like, this thing is poison. This thing is destroying the society that we're trying to build. We are going to ban it altogether. And then the Roaring Twenties and speakeasies, and everyone was like, no, mm-hmm. we love it too much. Mm-hmm. Like we need to have it. And so I don't know. I would love to do more research on like the history of alcohol, and maybe I'll actually get some legitimate information, and then we can do a podcast about it.
Yeah. Well, just so you know, you sound incredibly intelligent to me, so don't doubt yourself, girl.
I'm like, in Washington times, whenever that was.
So when I first stopped drinking alcohol, it was just to do Dry January in 2021. And mm-hmm. week one into it, I started listening to Holly Whitaker's Quit Like a Woman, which we've talked about and referenced a lot.
Yeah.
I love a lot about Holly's book and experience and The Tempest. You know, I'm probably a little bit more on the mindset that like abstinence isn't, you know, maybe feasible for everyone, and sometimes the abstinence effect can push people into drinking further. But I took so much from that book, and I think it was the first step in me really peeling back that layer like we talked about, and you know, just understanding that knowledge is power.
I agree. I'm listening to Holly Whitaker's book right now on audiobook that I got from the library. Mm-hmm. But that really did kind of open my eyes to all the ways that big alcohol is playing a part in our lives. And I'm curious, in conjunction with mommy culture, how has that affected you as a parent? As you know, you said that you do talk about and educate with Iris, but how do you navigate that you know, has she been exposed to it through other people? Like, what's kind of, what's the convo? What's the sitch over there?
Okay, so we're still kind of trying to get a feel for it. You know, we do co-parent with two other parents in another household. And so just respecting everyone's boundaries, we just talk about what's best for Steve and I. You know, we definitely aren't having this like hardcore conversation about it being pure evil. I'm not ever going to villainize other people's relationship with alcohol. That's up to them to, you know, take a look at if they want. But with that being fucking said, I had a straight up, I don't know, maybe some people would call it a Karen moment, if you will, but
I cannot wait to hear about this.
I'm gonna own it. It was really important to me and it felt appropriate at the time. So it was Halloween. Iris is a middle schooler and she came home from school and she said to me, Katie, there was this kid in my class today who came to school in a Budweiser costume, like a beer costume.
That's just dumb. That's not a good costume. Like, basic.
And like, there are, I don't know if any of you listening have children in school, but there are like extremely strict guidelines in place about costumes for so many reasons, cultural appropriation, just like straight up fucking ignorance, right? And so you would assume that drug and alcohol paraphernalia is also on that list. However, it's not. I went back and looked and there was nothing about that. So I, you know, asked what happened and she said that nothing happened to the kid. He just wore it all day at school. And I was like, he didn't have to change or anything like that. She's like, no. And I was like, well, how did it make you feel? She's like, I don't know. I just thought it was weird and dumb. You know, I don't think she's ever seen a Budweiser bottle. Like, even when we did drink, it was a fancier beer. And I don't think that her mom or stepdad drinks Budweiser either. So, you know, she brought it up and she was fine. And she would probably be mortified if she knew that I decided I should email her teacher and her principal.
Oh, you're getting in trouble, school.
Yeah, I will say that I contacted my co-parenting, like, cohort, right? And I was like, listen, y'all know I'm on this soapbox right now, right? So this was like 10 months into my sobriety. And
yeah.
Do you think that this is worth bringing to attention to a school? And Iris's mom was like, yeah, like you should. Especially if it's heavy on your heart, Katie, like this might be a really good, you know, opportunity to just address something that could be prevented in the future.
Yeah. And to be fair, even though big alcohol tries to get their fucking message everywhere, I remember that even though there was so much branded merch that my dad got from working at Western Beverage, but I was not allowed to wear any of it because he would get in trouble. Like, kids cannot be representing alcohol. I couldn't be caught at a duck game wearing something that said Budweiser because it would, you know, get my dad in trouble. And so really, kids representing things that are 21 plus, like, I don't know, it's just weird. Like, weed's legal now. Would you let your middle schooler dress up like a giant fucking joint? And I mean,
I think that's hilarious, but also no.
I'm saying it and I'm like, I mean, it'd be fucking funny. Yeah, and dope as shit. Yeah, yeah. But
totally. And I also don't, I don't advocate for marijuana use before the age of 21. I really think that your brain should be fully developed before you're introducing any kind of substance to your body. So that's my stance on it. Not everyone feels the same, and that's totally fine. And I'm not even having that conversation because it's not mine to have, you know?
Yeah.
But I wanted to read you guys the email I sent the principal.
Yes.
Okay. So it says, hi, said principal, who is also a badass, by the way, and is a stepmom. And she like has come to me with that information and we've connected. She was the principal at Iris's elementary school as well. And so just a little, you know, preface. I said, I don't want to make a stink for no reason, but Iris came home and mentioned a student in her class dressed up as an alcoholic beverage for Halloween. I believe she said it was a Budweiser can. We are an alcohol-free household by choice and are raising our kiddos with an awareness around alcohol use and the effects it has on our health. She was not personally harmed by the costume, but there are many children who do not have safe homes and environments because of the presence of alcohol who attend middle school. I just hope this was addressed with the student's parent. Big Alcohol does not need any more help with advertising. They have plenty as it is. We believe it is glorified and we do not take the effects seriously enough as a society. Drinking and driving rates are up 30% on Halloween and it's a very scary time for a lot of people. Thank you for your time and understanding. I'm sure it feels impossible to monitor costumes, and I don't want to ruin the fun for the kids, but I thought this was worth mentioning.
I love that. I love that you're like, look, it's fucking hard out there,
but take care of this. So, do we want to hear the response?
Yeah.
Okay. She says, thanks so much for reaching out and sharing your concerns. Just like we don't allow clothing or other items with drug or alcohol references, we do not allow costumes either. We always take the opportunity to educate and reteach, and in this case, we reach out to both parents and student after the incident. What I can share is a truly unintentional mistake from a family not familiar with American culture and customs, who really believe the costume to be funny. Big learning moments around the middle school, and this was definitely one of them, and for both the family and for me as an administrator. Again, thank you for reaching out. I appreciate your approach and your understanding as always.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I did a little digging and some research, and it truly was like this family who is not from the United States that transplanted here, and just like the Simpsons being crazy cool in other cultures, like as an American pastime, it's alcohol. Alcohol's the same, which is sad.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, that is big alcohol at work. That's how we've been that's how we've been represented to other countries. So I also learned a lot from that experience.
Dude, Girls Gone Wild, MTV Spring Break. God. Like, what about all of that shit?
What about Jackass?
Yeah, basically MTV. I mean, which I loved, so it's really hard for me to slander it, but
it was bad.
Yeah, it was just a Jersey Shore, like.
Well, and even like with Jackass, Steve-O, right? He's been sober for 14 years.
Wow. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool.
I hate that every time I find out someone's sober, it's a surprise. It's like the secret society of like, oh, wait, you don't do that either. That's so fucking cool.
I know. I love it. Fun fact. Not fun, actually. This is really sad, but
don't mess with our emotions like that.
You know, I as I said, that we were going to be sprinkling some facts like in and out of the episode. Now is a cheery time to relay this message, which I didn't know until recently. Reframe app asked me to be in like this like TikTok Instagram reel where we stated that each year over 3 million people die in alcohol related deaths worldwide.
That's fucking crazy. How many? I'll have to look this up. I'm just curious, like, how many people live in America, or like, is that like the equivalent of a state's worth of people that are just outie every fucking year?
Just outie. Well, I think, let me look it up, but the U.S. population is 330 million. So 3 million is what percentage of that? 1/100?
I have no idea. I don't know.
It's time for me to math again. I hope that people really like listening to us talk, because I feel like I've wasted everyone's time tonight.
We're just angry and we have a lot to say, but I feel like we cannot end on a sour note because there are some things to be hopeful for. So
100%. Yeah. What are you like looking forward to do with this information? What's your plan?
Have hashtag dry hard fam rule the world. I'm really excited because I feel like, especially since folks have been quarantining and it's been recorded that drinking has significantly increased, that there is an awareness that it is not good for folks. It's not been good for people's mental health. It's not been good for people's physical health, especially when they're stuck inside all day. So I do really feel like there's a cultural push towards, or just a cultural shift to questioning big alcohol and questioning alcohol's relationship, how it plays a part in your life. So I really feel like this sober curious moment is going to be a thing. I definitely at least hope that it's not going to be a fad. I think people are seeing the benefits of it. And I'm really excited for, right, like all the NA options that are coming out. I feel like there's more and more that are on the market. People are seeing that there's a demand for them. And, you know, oftentimes they're still made by alcohol companies and big alcohol, but at least it's a lesser of two evils and you can really vote with your dollar and start purchasing things that don't include alcohol and start to minimize that fat bankroll in those bigwigs pockets. So
totally.
I'm excited for the sober curious moment. I feel like it's really taking off. So
yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm really excited that I've had some opportunities like with Dry Hard Pod and Dry January and running that group. I've been working with Thousand Hours Dry to really get some cold, hard facts and information to people. You know, that page that I host on Saturdays has 33,000 followers. Like, that's how many people have actively sought out going 1,000 Hours Dry.
And that's just the main group too, right? Because there's also subgroups like Canada, LGBTQIA.
Yeah, BIPOC, there's parents, the 1,000 Hours Dry parents is really great. And then there's 1,000 Hour Dry Babes, which is just like, I just imagine like a bunch of really hot sober sorority girls. And I love that.
Oh my God, that's very hot to me.
I know. So yeah, and then I mean, obviously working with Reframe App has been just like so crazy. I was actually gonna tell our listeners that because I just looked the other day at how many people have downloaded Reframe App. So first of all, it's number 32 on the health and fitness charts in the US.
We're like number 143 in philosophy because for some reason that's the category that we fell into. I need to look into that.
I love that. Yeah. And I mean, there's over 6,000 ratings alone on Reframe App. So very cool. I love being a part of it. Just getting information and helpful tools to people. I am really excited for the podcast for this because a few people have reached out to us. We have so many people we want to have on the pod. But one person in particular is a single mom who's reached out and has thought a lot about her relationship with alcohol and saw the struggles of it with two little kids. So I think that bringing awareness to what mothers deserve, right? What they're worth, what should be accessible to them. I feel really strongly about it. Iris's mom is a doula and talks a lot about mental health and being a mother. And having her on also at some point would be a dream just to go into depth about that because I'm sure a lot of our listeners are parents. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. I promised everyone at the beginning of the episode that I would talk about this New York Times article that I saw.
Yes, I hate it. I fucking hate it. Go for it.
I know. Sorry, friends. Another negative moment here. But actually, this turns into a good thing. So bear with me. So our friend over at The Magic is in the Middle sent and posted this article. And it was a New York Times article. And the headline was, Dry January is pure evil to bars reeling from COVID. And I was like, what? And then the short and shitty, you know, like clickbait statement underneath the title was, quote, unquote, Dry January is a wholly selfish endeavor that's a slap in the face to the struggling bars and restaurants that have suffered a seemingly never ending bout of COVID.
Fuck that, bro. I went to Ron Tom's the other day and I bought two $7 non-alcoholic cocktails and I got dinner. So my tab was still like $40 because they provided options for me to participate. And also this selfish endeavor, like when it comes to your physical and mental health, I just want to say, be selfish.
100%.
Like, that is the time where you need to be selfish because no one fucking has your back and no one's going to advocate for you the way that you can because everyone's just out looking to make a buck. And that is depressing as shit. But
well, and to add to that, I am, and this was from the words from someone else that I was like, wow, I am so happy that Dry January is causing this much of a disruption in this industry.
Yeah.
If it truly is, hell yes. Like, that is the silver lining in all of that. Like, this terrible article. I'm actually going to post a couple of the bits from it in this episode's Instagram post. So head over to our social and check it out if you want to read this horrendous article. It's just hilarious because it's like, wait, the alcohol market was valued at $1,344 billion. And bars and restaurants are suffering because I'm not drinking in January? Go fuck yourself.
That's such a that's just such a thing to make individuals feel like they are responsible for people not getting paid enough, for mom and pop shops closing, for all of this stuff. And you can only do so much as an individual.
Exactly. And then you like, it's like, okay, but Amazon doesn't have anything to do with that, right?
Yeah, it's just putting the blame again on the individual. Like, it's your fault if you can't drink responsibly. It's your fault if your local watering hole has to close its doors because you're not buying enough whiskey sours. Like, what? No.
And it's your fault. It's your fault. The straws are your fucking fault, right? Not these corporations that go unregulated. There's just so, it's just, there's so much there. I'm not going to launch off into that whole thing because it's just, okay. Yeah. Anyways.
We're killing the turtles. It's our fucking fault.
So, and like I said, I'm all about taking responsibility, and I have wholeheartedly. But now that I have, it's time for me to give people the tools and the information that can allow them to do the same. And it's like, just insane. Anyways, so of course this article was written by a fucking white man shaming women.
I still think it's a joke. I still think it's like, it has to be some sort of Onion article, like satire.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Do you think it is?
It's real and it's horrible.
Fellow New Yorkers, this January, I urge you to quash your inner Gwyneth Paltrow, put down the green juice, and put on something other than cashmere joggers and hit your local watering hole. That's another excerpt.
I wish that I could afford cashmere joggers.
I know. Bye. Me too.
That sounds amazing. Like, lean into it. Like, let's make it fucking cool to be sober, because I hate feeling like I'm the odd one out for making a decision that's insanely beneficial for my mental and physical health. So
100%. Well, and there's like, you know, good news that dry January is up 6% from last January this year. So 20% of Americans are estimated to be doing dry January. That's massive.
That's huge. That's awesome.
It's so huge. It's seriously so fucking cool, man.
You know, we mentioned in the beginning that we want this podcast to be for the sober curious, for the people who don't drink, for the people who just want to have a more conscious relationship with alcohol. Maybe you drink all the time, but you have a partner who's trying to cut back, or a friend, and you want to figure out how to be supportive. So there is a lot of hate and a lot of shit talking on big alcohol in this episode. But really, I think the more that we have information to be able to make informed decisions, like, I fucking rip a jewel all day and I know that it's bad for me, but if people are not aware that drinking alcohol can cause fucking rectal cancer,
right?
Like, those are just things that folks should be able to know and have information about. So we're not saying that you're evil because you participate in this giant system. We are just looking at overall systems that keep us small, keep us sick, keep us, you know, not playing at our highest level, and figuring out what we can do to breach those systems and to get through to people and make it feel like it is not their fault if they're addicted to a substance that is being marketed so heavily to us on a daily basis. So you're not a bad person.
No.
If you drink alcohol, we are not anti you. We are anti billion-dollar industry that profits off of 3 million people a year dying. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, for sure. I saw something on Instagram the other day, Kaylee, that I really wanted to give to our listeners. I shared it on my story, but it was posted by the page Creative Sobriety on Instagram. Great page to follow. They shared, normalize asking friends how their relationship with alcohol is going and normalize answering honestly. Part of what we're saying here is that, like, if you are a drinker, that's okay. And but let's like remove this secret hush hush stigma that big alcohol has put on our relationship with alcohol and villainized.
Yeah. So what do we want to leave people with? Do we have any bright, shiny stars, some resources, some happy news that we can send people off into the world with?
Yeah.
Some tools for rebellion.
Yeah. Let's just keep having these conversations and disrupting the norm. Right.
Yeah.
Like, even if you are a drinker, let's be introspective about this. We're growing in so many other ways. We have so much information at our fingertips. We can't ignore this information anymore. Okay, guys, I'm reading the notes right here. And Kaylee, I'm obsessed with what you wrote here.
What did I say?
Help make not drinking cool and not just for virgins.
Yeah. Seriously, it's not just for virgins who can't drive. It's super cool.
It's really cool to be sober.
It's so cool.
Check in with your friends, ask them how they're feeling, share your experience, and just remember at the end of the day that big alcohol is the devil.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's the devil.
That's it. I feel like we brought a lot of content to our listeners today, so I just want to end our show with some information on our affiliates.
Yeah, sounds good. Let her rip.
If you or someone you know has expressed they are ready to change their relationship with alcohol, download Reframe app to cut back, quit, or get to know more about the effects of alcohol on your body, mind, and spirit. There's a 7-day free trial. You can also use code Katie, K-A-T-Y, for 15% off of your first in-app purchase. And just as a reminder that using the code Katie is 100% anonymous. I am not notified. No one from Dry Hard Pod knows. And I think that's really important that people out there know that they can join and not be fucking outed, right? Like, we get it. It's scary.
Also, if you want to support small non-alcohol instead of big alcohol, there's a lot of really cool companies that are doing some cool shit for providing non-alcoholic alternatives. So we have been partnering with High Street Tonics, and they have a specific Sober Curious bitters kit that you can get. So Katie, I know that you've tried most all of them, all of the bitters. So
I am obsessed with the bitters and the tonics. They are herbal and organic, made with ingredients that actually have holistic properties. And the best part is this woman-owned business gives you information about that. And I think that's really rad. Yeah, their Sober Curious Survival Kit is amazing. And there are so many mocktail recipes that she sends your way with each kit. So it's like totally personal. I 100% think that everyone that's listening should go buy the $35 Sober Curious Survival Kit, use our code for 10% off, and support a badass woman who owns her own business and lives in Eugene. And I think she just quit her day job to do this side hustle. And I'm so fucking proud of her.
Yes. Get it, get it. Get it.
Yeah, so we have our link tree in our bio. You can access the Reframe information as well as the High Street Tonics information there. You can also use it to share our podcast, to get to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, or to download our episodes on Spotify. All of it helps get our information to people who need to hear it.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we didn't bum you out too much. Let's be part of the change you want to see in the world. That's our episode.
I don't think that was depressing.